Yeah, man. Did I get that right? I got converted out there. Got a few more lines. Wagwan. Glad to be back here. Looks like the sound doesn't want to like me this morning. Let's see. Got him. Thank you. Well, it's good to be back here. I told someone I left half my heart in Jamaica, and it's a beautiful country, beautiful people, really, really, really great time. I went to the set of sermons that I thought I'll preach, and I had a little small church up in some sister down here. She's from Hopewell, really nice country church. We started off there, and I saw the audience, and I told Molly, man, this is not the sermons that I need to preach here. I need to speak about the love of Jesus. So I revamped the entire sermons out there. But beautiful. Just got some notes from the president last night. There was about 30 to 40 preachers out on the island. This is only on West Jamaica now. This is off the island. I was preaching in one church here. And if you know the area, you know where Home Depot is? Another 800-seater church out there, and you get down to Lucy, and you get down to the other place, and small groups everywhere. Everywhere you turn around is Adventist. Isn't that amazing? And I was, and I went to the town, and I met the Rastafarians also. Lots of weed out there. Call it ganja. So got used to the term ganja, and got the Rastafarian badges, Haile Selassie, Elijah Muhammad, and all the rest of the doctrines there that I listened. But I got to meet these guys every morning. I spoke to them, and I wanted to know what they believe. I read a little bit about it, and I said, man, Haile Selassie was a slave also, a slaveholder. And you know Ethiopians, half of them don't like him, half of them like him, you know. And so it was quite a controversy there. I said, by the way, did Haile Selassie smoke weed? You know, so we're all confused, but it's a little doctrine that came up there, and they made that he's one of the great prophets that they see. And I told him he's just an ordinary man. He kept servants, probably abused people and the rest of it. And but was a great learning experience with the Jamaicans. And we just had news this morning that from this events around the island, there were 23,000 people that have come into the church. Praise God. And Adventists are so big out there that when the president, we sat next to the president of the General Conference, Ted Wilson, Mark Finley, and we got all these photographs. If you want to see us in the Jamaican papers, we're sitting with all these dignitaries. But when Ted Wilson lands at the airport, there's a police entourage there. All the roads are closed, and the president is taken to his place. That's how much respect the Adventists have there. In fact, the hotel that we stayed in was also owned by Adventists. Anywhere you turn around, if they don't, and not Adventists, even the Rastafarians, with all the ganja, they say, I was an Adventist. I was an Adventist. And probably that's where they got vegetarianism from. They smoke the weed, but the vegetarians. It's the ironic thing, but it's a beautiful country. People are gracious. They're spontaneous. The food was great. And I was still, Molly, I love the ocean. Molly couldn't get me out from the ocean. Every time I had a chance, I spent 3 hours in the ocean. And you can see my color. And one lady told me, Pastor Chetty, you're going too black too soon. So she says, you've got to roast a little bit. You know, so you're getting black too soon. So it was a great time there. There's plenty of stories. I traveled on the little cabs and buses. And the most exciting one was I took a golf cart. You know the golf carts? They have a little golf carts from Hopewell going right up into the mountain. And these golf carts are probably about 20, 30 years old. But they can maneuver through those narrow streets, and they're better than our 4x4s here. You know, they got big rocks on the streets, but they will go to the side, and I was cringe. One morning, I went, the first week we got involved with the building. By the way, Lakeview Church is sponsoring a 240-square-foot building. It's going to be an after school, and we've raised funds for it. We take the building right up to the roof level. Amen for that? And this is going to be for, there's a lot of illiteracy there, and for kids that are after school that need extra education. And so we're going to be furnishing that school. And so that's our project up there. We started it and managed to, looks like I'm a builder all over the world. I managed to see the architects. I found a surveyor. I went to the city. I met the city fathers. I met the city mayors. Made contact with them. They said, wait 90 days. I met a few people and a few Adventists right on top. They said, Pastor Chetty, you will get it in a few days' time. So we got the plans already, and we already broke ground up there, and they're going to be start to build it soon. But the story with the cart here, I was going to buy the material for the building, and we had no transport. By the way, we're stuck. We had no transport for the first week. LSA, you know the area we're staying up there. By the way, LSA and Delford came over and to visit us. There was no transport to get to the ground, so we were like housebound for the first week, but managed to get a cart to come up and pick me up. And so while the guy picked me up, and I saw him as driving with basically one shoe, one slipper. And he went down, and I went to order my stuff and went into the store, this hardware store. And I finished buying my stuff, and he was just a, give me a pack of nails. And I'm wondering why he's buying nails. I said, hey, I'll pay for the nails. It's a few dollars. I'll pay for it. And I paid for the nails and asked him, what are you going to do with the nails? He says, man, my one slipper, the flip came out. And these are big nails. He says, I'm going to take that one flipper and I'm going to screw the nails into the slipper. I felt sorry for him. That's his only business. He runs his old cart there, and I know Molly bought me a nice flip-flops shoe for this thing. I said, man, here is my shoe, you know. And when I gave him my shoe, I was excited. Tears came to his eyes, you know. I told him, throw the shoes away, keep the nails. You know, you can build something else. But when we got to the house, and I was telling the lady, this is a really poor guy, you know. And she says, and she's a wonderful lady. She's God sent. Her name is Annette. Beautiful Jamaican lady. And she really, really gave us a great time. She says, I have another pair of shoes. She bought a brand new FUBU or FUBA shoes that was in the box. And she gave it to him also. So he was really, really excited. And he thanked her so much. But there are many, many small little stories on the island that make the trip so worthwhile. So I would go back again. The blue waters of Jamaica would attract me anytime. And the people are gracious there. And God's work is growing in leaps and bounds. And so pray for Jamaica. That could be the leading island that could evangelize America one day. And I believe that all the people that immigrate here, and most of them come to America and start their life and are very successful, yeah? God's going to bless that island. God's going to bless that island one of these days. And in fact, every second person is an Adventist on the island. Isn't that amazing? Every second person is an Adventist on the island. And I would like to live in a place like that, guaranteed. It's a really. So, well, let me get to my sermon. And I'm going to preach this morning. And I thought I'll start a new series. I've been speaking about the different series, and I was telling Molly, thank you very much, all my different series that I've stopped halfway, and sometimes you get tired of things, and I push it one side, I'm tired of Genesis, I got a little bit tired, not tired, but I think you got tired, you know, listening to a long series. So I thought I'll preach from Ecclesiastes. How many of you heard sermons from Ecclesiastes? Yeah, we use it now and then, but I want to find Jesus Christ in Ecclesiastes. For the next few weeks, we'll jump into Ecclesiastes and see what Ecclesiastes has to offer. Right, so our title this morning is No Gain from Our Toil. It comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 11. Now, did you know that most of the wealthiest families, lose all the wealth in three generations? Go and study the biographies of great and richest people in the world. When they pass the wealth on to the next generation, and when the next generation passes it on, basically the money has all disappeared. Be it billions and billions of dollars. Within the next three generations, all the wealth is gone. And you see, it's our natural desire to accumulate wealth. Is that true? It's something in us. Don't lie to me. Is that true? Yes, yes. And our society offers countless ways to make you rich. And thousands of ways you can become rich, they tell you. But there's only still 1% of the world that controls the world. Only 1%. I think people know that I'm almost to retirement now. And I get lots of these advertisements. And I got a small nest egg like this. And they're sending me, Mr. Chetty, take your retirement money and invest it with Fisher. Invest it with this, and you'll be living a long life with millions of dollars. So they want me to take the small little investment, invest it with them, and so I could make millions. Is that true? No. Apart from it being a lie, what am I going to do with the millions when I'm old? I've got arthritis, I've got diabetes, I will have a triple bypass by then. Half my sight is gone, half my hearing is gone, I walk with a stick. The only running I do will be from my bedroom to the TV lounge. What am I going to do with all the millions? See the lie? You see the lie? I see these people. So, this quest is found in everybody. To be wealthy. Now, I lived in a very, very poor household, and we lived in the fringes of society in Africa. And my dad, lovely man, I love him to bits, he always told me, he had no education, he hadn't been to school, he worked in the asbestos plant, hard work, gets up 3 o'clock in the morning, gets a few dollars a week. But my dad always said that, son, he told all the family, he said, we're going to make some money one day. And I was a young boy, and I said, man, I want to live in at least in one bedroom house. We had half a bedroom house, half a kitchen. At least they make it one bedroom. I said, Dad, you'll be very successful, you know, if you move into one bedroom. And so we had just started to go to church, 15, 16, going to church at that time. And my dad wasn't converted to Christianity at that time. And he would come and pick me up from church. Usually parents will teach you not to gamble. But my dad would come and pick me up from church after 12 o'clock service with me. He says, I'm going to take you to the horse racing now. I'm going to teach you how to gamble. So my dad was very kind. Because he didn't know how to read, and I would bet for him. I would bet for him. And he said, son, if I bet on this horse, and the few pennies he had in his pocket, he says, son, if I bet on this horse, it's going to make us a lot of money. And I would get excited, man. And if he made like $1.50 that day, $1.50 was like, great. We made a lot of money. But he would say, man, he would study his horses all week. I don't know what he'd study about these horses. I don't know if you guys don't gamble, eh? You guys don't gamble. Nobody gamble here. This is a very innocent church. And my dad used to say, son, one of these days, when this horse comes first, I'm going to retire. But you see, my dad died at 94, and his horses are still running. never won a thing in his life. But you see, in his own mind, he had this quest that I want to make something. I want to accumulate wealth. In fact, the few pennies he had in his pocket, he wanted to turn it around and faithfully buy lottery tickets. You don't buy lottery tickets, I know that. But he would buy this lottery ticket and he would say, "Man, son, you buy me this lottery ticket and I'll go and buy him this lottery tickets." And he says, "We're going to make a lot of money once this clicked." And in fact, once it clicked, he'd go to the papers, newspaper, every day he would buy the newspaper, he would look at the newspaper, he would match those numbers, and one day he said, "Son, I got it. I got it. All the numbers matched. And let's go and check the payout. It was $1.50. You only made $1.50 from the payout, because if you match so many numbers, you get a payout. And he made $1.50. And so he faithfully played the jackpot and thinking that he would make millions. And by the way, if you read the story of those who won the jackpots from the 1800s up until now, 90% of them die penniless. 90% of them die penniless, chasing for something that they cannot afford. So chasing wealth, accumulating wealth is a trap. Is a very big trap. The rampant chasing of materialism in our culture is huge, and we want everything bigger and better. Is that true? You know, you started off with small burgers here. And they said, "No, let's make it bigger. Let's make it bigger." Now you want a triple burger. I've never seen anything in the world as a triple burger when I got to America. The burger is so high, it's like Manhattan buildings. And in South Africa, when you ask for a large drink, that's a large drink for us. When you ask for a large drink here, that's a, you'll big feed an entire village. But you drink it yourself. And so this is want everything bigger and better. And this is not something new in society. It's ingrained in us. And the old Israelites living in the land of Israel, they fell into this trap, and they always depended on the Lord for sustenance. They depended on God for the daily bread, and they lived between the crossroads between Egypt and Israel, and in fact Egypt and Asia. And so Israel had become the center of modernization, businesses, and so the Israelites thought that fortunes could be made, and so they were scrambling to get very rich. But Solomon had warned them many years ago, apart from God, what? People gain nothing from all the toil. Is that true? If there's no God and you're chasing, it's basically you're chasing your shadow. Apart from God. And he goes on to say in Ecclesiastes 1:2, vanity or what? Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And when vanity is translated literally, it means what? Breath. Now, I lived in South Africa. And very rarely, like Jamaica, South Africa is hot every day. I don't know what the weatherman does in Jamaica. Today, the weather is going to be bright. Next day, the weather is going to be bright. The next day, the weather is going to be bright. I don't know. If they get a little cloud, everyone's got a jacket on. You know, when it comes 79 degrees, they're like, "Hey, today is a really bad day." Same in Africa. The weatherman says, "Tomorrow is going to be great. Tomorrow is going to be great." I mean, he gets paid for just saying, "Tomorrow is going to be great." And so when we're young, very rarely it'll get cold in South Africa. And if it gets really, really cold, we young fellows, just before we go to school, and we would stand out and we'd blow this cold air coming out. You know, and you'll see like, and we'll try to blow this breath, this vapor that comes out, and we'll try to catch this vapor as it blows. It was exciting for us because we never had vapor coming from our mouths when you live in Africa. It's so hot. But when it gets really cold, vapor comes out from your mouth. And so what do we see? We try to catch this vapor. There's nothing to hold on. It has a short lifespan. No substance in this vapor. And in fact, the vapor is elusive. Every time you try to catch the vapor, it disappears. And so, that's what the psalm says. You have made my days a few handbreadths, and my lifetime is as nothing in your sight. Surely everyone stands what? We're just mere breath. Ask old people about life. Anyone over the 70s here? I don't know if I can call you old in 70s in America. You're still young. You're still alive. But see, for most of them, life is like a mist. It's here for a little while, and then it disappears. Just comes here, and it's gone. Gone here today, gone tomorrow. In fact, life is brief. It's elusive. And it all seems so pointless and futile. And this is why Solomon says, he could have said, everything is vanity. But what he says? Vanities of vanities. And in fact, there's a magazine called Vanity. Oh, so appropriate title for the magazine. So appropriate title. So true about the name and the things they offer in the Vanity magazine. How many of you read that? You buy the cream, and the cream is going to change your whole life. You use this perfume, some young man is going to follow you to the marriage altar. You know? Try this, use a lipstick, and some young rich prince is going to come and kiss you. Magazines, you saw the advertising. And so Solomon uses the word twice to make sure you get the point. To make sure you get the point. Human life is utter vanity. Everything on earth is short-lived and lacks substance. Our clothes, our cars, our latest technology. We wait for the latest technology. What happens in a week? Where's it lying? In fact, you lose it most of the time. We're so crazy about getting the latest fad. Everything disappears. In fact, to prove his point, Solomon would look at different angles at life. And he's asking this question, what do we gain from life with our work? What do we gain from life with the toil that we do every day? He goes on to say in Ecclesiastes 1:3, he says, what do people gain from all the toil at which they toil under the sun? What's the expected answer? What answer does he give? Nothing. He says nothing. And from a circular perspective, apart from God, people gain nothing from their toil. He goes on to compare life with nature. See what he says? A generation goes, and what? A generation comes, but the earth remains forever. He's basically showing the brevity of life, the shortness of life. And we usually say, if you had to write this sentence in modern terms, how would you rephrase the sentence? We'll say what? A generation comes and a generation goes. But Solomon is so smart in phrasing this sentence. He says, a generation goes and a generation comes. He places the emphasis on replacement. That's what Solomon is doing here. In spite of constant changes, in reality, nothing changes. Did you get that? In spite of constant changes, in reality, nothing changes. There is no gain. In fact, in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 7, all streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. Powerful. The earth remains the same, like the sea. Nothing changes. There is no gain. And in fact, he moves from the earth to the sun. He says, the sun rises and the sun goes down and hurries to the place where it rises. Goes on to say, the sun does not attain anything by going around and round. For the sun, it's mere toil, following its daily journey. There is no opportunity for rest for the sun. It's pauseless for the sun. It's like a treadmill, like an hamster going on a treadmill, like you running on a treadmill for an hour, like I used to do, going nowhere. I'll run 10 miles on the treadmill, but I'll be in the same place. There is no gain. In fact, From the sun, he turns to the wind. He says, the wind blows to the south, goes round to the north, round and round goes the wind, and on its circuits, the wind returns. In fact, he says, the wind itself is caught in a rut. The wind is going in circles. The whole world is in a movement of activity. And he asks the question, is it purposeful? All this activity abounding in the earth, in perpetual motion, like a hamster in the wheel, but no destination is reached. It says, this display of endless cosmic exertion is all for nothing. For nothing. The earth remains the same. If the basic elements for the ancient world gain nothing from their toil, then surely human beings gain nothing from their toil. Solomon was wise in every way conceivable. He summarizes this in 1 Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 8. He says, all things are wearisome, more than one can express. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is what? Nothing new under the sun. Isn't that true? You get people trying to discover this and fancy this and fancy that, new this and new that. No, nothing, friends. Goes into the eye, the ear is seeing, but nothing is attained. Nothing new, no gain. In fact, he switches now to human history. We see all this frantic activity happening in our time and happened yesterday, but it is going nowhere. Futile repetition. If there is no gain in human history, there are certainly no gain for individuals. There is nothing new. Somebody objects to his radical claim, says there are some things new. They're challenging him. This is what he says in Ecclesiastes 1:10. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? His answer to the objection is short and abrupt. He says, what does he say? It has already been in ages before us. So in the light of this repetitive history, we basically get a variation of something new. That's what we have. We don't have anything new. Ecclesiastes 1:11 says, the people of long ago are not remembered, nor will there be any remembrance of people yet to come by those who come after them. Think of the great men. Think of the great men. Some of us can't even remember them. The greatest men on the planet come to nothing. Our memory is too short. It makes no difference of what one has accomplished or what one may be. When death comes, what happens? Doesn't matter how much you had. Doesn't matter how great you are. Doesn't matter where you come from. When death comes, everything perishes. All hope perishes. And no one is better off than others. Isn't that the beauty? All those same fellows that are up there, the kings and the queens and the dictators, all get buried down the very same place. All become the same elements as you and I. In fact, death dashes all hopes of immortality, including the immortality of being remembered forever. This is why nobody could be remembered forever. The only person that is remembered forever is Jesus. That's the only person. In fact, Jesus makes the same point in the New Testament. Jesus asks in Matthew 16, for what will it what? Profit a man or people if they gain what? The whole world and lose his own soul. See, friends, if life is forfeited, you lose your soul. The very essence of your soul, while seeking and while tramping people down and while tripping people down, your life is sold to the devil. And in the end, you have nothing left. Did you get that? In the end, you have nothing left. When people forfeit their life, they have gained nothing, no profit. Jesus makes the same point in Ecclesiastes with a simple story in Luke chapter 12, verse 16 to 20. He says, the land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, what should I do, for I have no place to store my crops? Fancy fellow. Then he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and do what? What should he be doing, by the way? Sharing. Sharing. And that's what Christianity, the heart and the core of Christianity, is about others. This is why we say, not I, but Christ. It's always Christianity. The core of Christianity, the center of Christianity, is about others. And this is why Christianity is taking the second road. Because Christians are putting themselves first. Jesus brought this appropriate story. He says, then he said, I will do this. Big bow tie. I will build bigger barns. I will expand my company. I will buy, I offer the shares to all the poor people so that the poor can buy the shares on the stock market. As long as I get their money, and when their share goes down, I really don't care. That's what the stock market is about. We all the poor people got all our pension funds and everything. Every time when the market goes down, Frankie, you know that. You're the big business guy. What happens? In 2008, I lost the little bit I had. It came to this. Lost one third of my pensions. Used to pay faithfully. They tell me, you're going to have a great retirement. But they didn't tell me about the stock market. They didn't tell me the stock market was going to crash. And when the stock market crashes, all the big boys got their money. They don't lose anything. Everyone's satisfied. Everyone's content. They got the big dreams they're chasing. But as long as they can rip you off in the corner, they'll do that. And so, I'll pull my barns down. I'll offer my more shares. And I'll build larger ones. And then I will store all my grain and all my goods. Again, what's he doing? He says, man, you know grain, how, what's the life of grain? It's limited, you know that. You've got a couple of years with grains. You can store them for a few years. He says, I want to store them. I want to store them. Store all my grains. I want to store all my goods. And all around his farm and all the people that are working for him are what? Are living on the fringes. Picking up the mere leftovers on the ground and trying to make a living. Yet this man says, I'm going to store all my grain and I will say to my soul, listen to him, soul, listen to the egocentricness of man. That's what man is about. Man is self-centered and he's saying, soul, soul, you have ample goods. You know when we reach that stage? We reach that stage. You know when we're poor? We're on our knees, asking God for the next slice of bread, asking God to pay our rent, asking God to pay our mortgage. Then you get your education and you move a next level. And then you get a little further. Your prayer life becomes lesser. The Bible becomes secondary. And then you get another level on there. You get a little richer. What happens? What happens when you go? Yes. My soul, I'm satisfied now. My bank balance is growing. Why do I need the simple folk in the church here? Why do I need everything else around me? No, no, no. I'm totally satisfied. I can lay my goods for many years. I can relax. I can eat. I can not buy the cheap drink. I can buy the expensive wines now. And I can be merry. That's it. Does it sound like us? Don't put the story for that fellow. It's for us for today, yeah? Living in the States, it goes on to say. But God said to him, there's always a day of judgment. Isn't that true? There's always a day of reckoning. And if those guys and we don't see a reckoning now, a day is coming soon. There is a judgment day. Every religion talks about a judgment day. They talk about a day of reckoning. Those who don't believe in God too talk about a day of reckoning. But God said to him, "You fool. You fool. This very night, your life, your soul." You see, we chase everything for just a temporary gain. Do you know that? We turn our backs on God. Look at the empty chairs here. That's where all these folks are. These folks are busy with their very own things. If they cared about God, this church would be full. That very night, your life, your soul is being demanded of you. All the things you have prepared, whose will they be? You know, that's a serious question. You know, when Steve Jobs died, he's made billions and billions and billions of dollars. I watched an interview the other night with Melinda Gates and Bill Gates, and they told him, you're the third richest in the world. He says, "Man, I'm trying to give it as fast as I can." That's the only billionaire I know that's a philanthropist in the world, but people accumulate. "I want to be the richest in the world." God said to me, "Fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you, and all the things you have prepared, whose will they be?" Probably some will go to the SPCA for the dog pound. Some will go to some other research, whatever it is. All this accumulation you have made all your life comes to nothing. You're rotting in the grave within 24 hours. 72 hours, you are non-existence, and within a week, your name's out of the charts. All your funds are going to somebody else. Somebody else. When the rich man died, he had gained nothing from all his toil. Can you see Solomon and Jesus are working hand in hand here? Two wise men. God had given Solomon all the wisdom, and here comes God in the form of man, making the very same statement. And he's telling us over and over, people, understand, all this thing is just nothing. All the things you've prepared, whose will they be? And when the rich man died, he had gained nothing from all his toil. There was nothing left over, no profit. And Jesus concludes this parable. "So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich towards God." Powerful. Powerful statement. Powerful statement, friends. In fact, Jesus encourages us. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal." You find it to the richest people, and people who have a lot cannot sleep. People who have just limited amount, you put your head in your pillow and you're snoring. Next half an hour, you're snoring, so you don't think about it. But the rich and the wealthy are turning around and twisting and finding out where they got the millions, but where can I get the next billion from? We're chasing for the next billion. Worried who's going to take your money, where the markets are going to go down. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Jesus goes on to say in John chapter 6, verse 27, "Do not work for the food that perishes," clear statements, "but for the food that endures eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you." And Jesus' message is very clear, friends. We gain nothing if we store up our treasures on earth. We gain nothing if we toil apart from God. But our lives can have profit if we are, in Jesus' words, rich towards God. Rich towards God. If we store up our treasures in heaven, if we serve God, Paul confirms these words. "Therefore, my beloved, be steadfast." Things around you will shake you, will bring you down. He says, be immovable. Temptations are going to be there. It's going to come every step of its way. Always excelling in the work of the Lord. That should be our priority. not the worldly gain, not the fortune and fame, no. Always excelling in the Lord, the work of the Lord, because you know that in the Lord your labor is what? Your labor is not in vain. But if your labor is not in the Lord, if our work is apart from God, the two wisest men are saying it, we gain nothing. And therefore Jesus warns us, this very powerful warning, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And friends, I don't have anything to offer you, but I offer you Jesus Christ this morning. He is the only one. In times like this, we need a Savior. Is that so? We are living in crucial times. You're talking about the trumpets, and we cannot comprehend what the trumpets are all about. But we're living in serious times. We're living in serious times. So my prayer is for you. Why not? Why not put your trust in the man who will never, ever let you down? The perfect man that walked this earth, and that is Jesus Christ. God bless you.